Growing up in the country, down in Bega, I don't remember ever seeing a beggar, ever seeing anybody that was sitting by the street corner. In fact, my first memories of really seeing this kind of situation was when I first went overseas, and it seemed almost every church that you went into in Europe, there was always one or two people sitting there asking for alms, asking for money. And I was never sure what to do. You know, older, wiser people would, you know, tell me, you know, that it's not really necessarily a good thing to give money to such people, that it, you know, they would just use it for drugs or for alcohol or whatever. Once I returned to Sydney and to Australia from that first trip, I then began to see, you know, people everywhere. Wherever I kind of looked, I began to notice the presence of the homeless, people who were sleeping rough, people who were in this kind of situation of absolute desperation. This story of Lazarus is still such a common story, a common encounter for us. And I suspect that many of us are still kind of perplexed about what is the right response to kind of have. Clearly, the rich man who is unnamed in this parable is doing something wrong. Even though there's nothing that we're told that he is ostensibly doing wrong, he's not actively persecuting Lazarus or doing anything that is violating his rights, but he's simply ignoring him. He's just completely caught up in his own little lush and rich world, dressed in purple, so the richest color. It was only the royalty that usually was dressed in purple. Fine linen suggests that his underwear also was of the best quality. A couple of weeks ago, we heard the parable of the prodigal son, where they had this magnificent feast to celebrate the son being lost and now being found. But this rich man is able to do that not just once in a while, but every day of his life, this opulence, this magnificence that he lives in. Meanwhile, there is Lazarus, and the text says he's laid there each day. So he has friends who come and bring him and place him there at the gate. So perhaps he's not even able to walk. He's so destitute. And that sense of wanting just the scraps of bread to fall from the master's table, just as the prodigal son wanted to have the food, the hops that was there being eaten by the pigs. The sense of destitution and desperation that is so obvious in this case. And just as the prodigal was there with the unclean animals of the pigs, so also Lazarus is there with the dogs, also unclean animals, licking at his wounds. They both died. The poor man doesn't even have the dignity of being buried. He's just simply taken to be at the bosom of Abraham. The rich man, of course, dies and is buried. So the contrast that Luke, you know, is beautifully setting up the contrast as he tells the story of this parable that Jesus speaks, not to the disciples that we've had for the last few weeks, but now to the Pharisees, those who pride themselves, we've heard in the intervening verses, for their money and for their wealth. And then we get this further contrast, Lazarus, and the word comes from Elazar in the Hebrew, which means El is God, Azar, God who saves, God who helps. But it doesn't look like God has really helped Lazarus in any way through the midst of this text. You know, Lazarus seems to be on his own, to be without hope. And yet, in the moment of death, there is this great transformation and this utter contrast between the two characters. Lazarus is there in the bosom of Abraham, while in the rich man is there in the torments of this situation. Now, remember, this is a parable. So this isn't Jesus offering definitive teaching about the way of what will happen to us, what our eternal destination is going to be about, what it's going to be like. There's no sense in, you know, trying to draw from, you know, a story what this is meant to kind of illustrate for the rest of our lives. But it does provide that sense of contrast between the two situations. At the time, most people, both in Greek culture and in Hebrew culture, kind of imagined that Sheol, in the Hebrew sense, was simply just a place where the dead would go. There was nothing kind of malicious about it. It was a place simply of waiting, of boredom, that there was nothing really happening in that moment until they longed for the second coming of the coming of the Messiah, that he would be able then to restore all people, and there would be a sense of people being raised to new life in a new situation of hope and of joy and all of that, what we get at the end of the book of Revelation, in Revelation 21 and 22. Not that the Jewish concept was quite as developed as we see in the Christian idea. But this is not hell. This is Hades. This is simply a place of waiting, a place of resting, without any sense of joy and wonder. But it's described in similar instances or similar imagery, or using that idea of Gehenna, the other idea for hell that we find in the New Testament, which is the Valley of Hinnom, just outside of Jerusalem. And it was a place that had become a place of great desperation, destitution. It was the garbage dump. And so there were flames because they would burn the garbage. Just as like in places like in Smoky Mountain, it's just outside of Manila, this garbage dump where, again, there are lots of beggars and people trying to work their way through that, but just this continual burning and the smoke and so forth from that place of agony. And so for us, this parable provides this call for us to really reflect. Just as the rich man hadn't really done anything wrong, it's not about this moral judgment, about the active choices that we make, about choosing bad, choosing wrong, but it's about the neglect. The only similar parable we heard 8 weeks ago on the 18th Sunday of the year, where again, there was a rich man who was so indifferent. He had a rich harvest, and what did he do? He pulled down his small barns to build bigger barns. And so it's only those two stories where we get a sense of actual judgment and condemnation about the actions of the two people, both rich and both indifferent. And it calls for us to really reflect upon our sense of connection within the community, to know that we are being judged by the way that we look after those around us, by the way we notice the needs of those around us. We can be content in our own little world, but we must know that we will be judged and condemned if we become so isolated, so insular, that we don't even notice the needs for love, for affection, for human goods as well, that we need to be aware of all of those needs around us and be caught up in that call of the Lord to see the needs of those around us. This gospel is inviting us to that reflection, to ponder, how is my life being led? Am I aware of those needs around us? Am I aware of the people around me who desperately need my love, my affection, my help? Or am I so caught up in my own little opulence that I'm not able to see those needs? It's a challenging and it's not an easy kind of gospel to ponder about, because it does speak to the very heart of our call to be people of faith. But this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where we have to address those needs within our world. And we have the needs. We have the capacity to answer at least some of them. We can't solve all of the world's problems, and we can't fix every situation. But we can do the little things that are available to us to offer that assistance and offer that help. Let's indeed take this gospel to heart and really pray for opportunities today to share the goodness that we have received, to share our abundance with those around us.